The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 43. London has more multimillionaires than any other city in the world. No wonder my pints cost so much.
1, 2, 3. I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin heart is burning, then well, you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going there soon. Then you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going there soon.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing someone I've admired from afar for a few years now. Way back on podcast number 4, I interviewed Jason Lewis, who was the first person to circumnavigate the globe using only human power. Through Jason, I heard of another amazing British adventurer named Alistair Humphreys, who has done some crazy trips himself, like biking around the world and pulling a 600-pound sled through the Arabian Desert. Today, Alistair will regale us with some of the most amazing stories. But what's awesome about Alistair is that he realizes that not everyone can or wants to do these long-term adventures. So he's going to introduce you to an incredible new movement he's started called Micro-Adventures, which is something anyone can start doing immediately. It's a fantastic podcast. Before we begin, if you haven't already, make sure to sign up for our email newsletter. You can do that from the computer. You can also do it from your smartphone. And that's going to be the best way for you to stay in the loop and know when new podcasts are released and also when new posts are put up on the blog. You can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. And you'll also receive our gift to you, the completely free Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire series. I look forward to having you join the community and the email list. And now let's jump into this great interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who once dragged a homemade steel cart with over 600 pounds of supplies through a desert, Alistair Humphreys of AlistairHumphreys.com, and author of the brand new book just published this week, Micro Adventures. Alistair, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So the first question I got to ask you is, when you are meeting people for the first time at a dinner party or you're out and someone asks you, Alistair, so what do you do? How do you respond?
Well, despite my job being essentially talking about myself, I don't actually like doing that in the real world. So normally in the real world, when I meet strangers, I pretend that I'm a teacher. However, if I'm trying to show off or I really get my arm twisted, then I say that I am an adventurer. That's what it says in my business card, so it must be true.
Yeah, so an adventurer, and that's, you know, a really cool term to throw out there. Like you said, when you want to brag, you say you're an adventurer, and getting to call yourself an adventurer is like not a thing that many people get to do. So can you give us a little bit of background of how you became quote unquote adventurer?
Okay. When I graduated from university, I didn't really know what to do in real life, and what I really excited me and felt important to me in life was adventure. And I wasn't an adventurer then, but I liked the idea of it. And I realized the only way to actually have an adventure was by getting out my front door and beginning. So I decided to cycle around the world. So I jumped on my bicycle with a tent and sleeping bag and pedaled away from my front door in the north of England. And I just kept pedaling for over 4 years until I eventually arrived back in my front door again. I cycled 46,000 miles through 60 countries over the space of 4 years. So I think the starting point for anything is always the hardest thing. It's just making a decision you're going to do something and then actually committing to it and beginning it. That's the hard part.
Yeah, and I love how all the Brits that I have on that are these explorers, adventurers, you and Jason Lewis, whenever you talk about it, it seems so matter of fact. It's, 4 years later, I came back to my front door. But what were some of the obstacles that you faced? And you said the biggest one is getting out your front door. And I would agree that anything, it's starting. But along the way, what were some of the obstacles you faced? Why did you keep going? Because 4 years is obviously quite a long time to be waking up and pedaling all around the world.
Yeah, it is a long time. I tried not to think about it in terms of I had to pedal that long in order to finish. And I tried to just accept what I was doing right now in this day as being what I wanted to be doing. The physical difficulties, I think people would tend to overplay, in that once you're very fit, if you ride your bike every day for months on end, you get very fit. And then cycling 50, 100, 120 miles a day really isn't very hard. And I'm not an athlete. I'm just a normal guy. You just get very fit. And then there's challenges like going through deserts and over mountains and stuff. And that's all quite hard, but quite exciting as well. Human challenges. People were constantly warning me in advance about the dangers of certain countries and getting robbed and murdered and terrorists blowing me up and all this sort of stuff. But the reality of that was that 99.99% of the people I met were just wonderfully kind, generous people. I felt so safe in the world. I was so welcomed everywhere I went, which really just leaves as a difficulty the third challenge, which is that inside my own head, which I found was actually by far the hardest part of the trip. Loneliness, boredom, homesickness, constant insecurity, never knowing where I was going to sleep the next night, always being a stranger, always being lost. Those things were quite exhausting. And there's a fine line between solitude, which is the wonderful experiences of traveling on your own, and loneliness, which is the sort of harder times, which I think anyone experiences, whether they're cycling around the world or backpacking somewhere or on a road trip.
Yeah, I think that's really common. Most people that I've talked to have done these epic journeys, like Jason, like Tom Allen, who also another Brit. It seems like you Brits are the adventure sect here, getting out of Britain and going, have always said it was what was inside their own head, or it was mental. And those are the biggest challenges. And we always think when we prepare for a journey, all right, I'm going to prepare physically, right? I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Is there any way, now that you've done it, that you would tell people, if you are going to go into this, a way that you could prepare yourself mentally, or is it really just working through it while you're on that adventure?
Are you talking about these sort of adventure type things I do, or backpacking travel type stuff?
Yeah, I guess the adventure stuff that you do, and then, you know, on a smaller note, a regular backpacking trip.
Well, I don't think it's a smaller note. I think it's just a different note. But I think the things like I do, these sort of physical expeditions, that the difficulty is that, or the reality is that everyone is a beginner when they begin, and trying to overcome that hurdle and not being intimidated by the fact that you haven't yet walked across the desert, but you want to walk across the desert, you have to begin that process. And that's really the hard thing. It's, I think, something like climbing mountains is more difficult, where the consequences of a lack of skill could be a bit more dramatic, where something like bicycling around the world, as long as you can ride a bike and know how to put up a tent, then you have all of the skills necessary to make it the whole way around the world. And therefore, you shouldn't be intimidated by being a novice and not having done it. You just need to commit to it. In the first stages, you might not have the confidence, perhaps, to set off to cycle around the world, in which case, just go cycle across your town, across your own country, or something smaller like that, just to get yourself going.
You talk about in your books, and there's some books that you have that people can read about your adventure cycling around the world. What were some of the memories that stand out the most? I know this is a loaded question, because 4 years you had to cycle around the world, but what were some of the things that you really did and you thought, all right, this is why I'm doing it, and it kept you going because you had this kind of ethereal, you know, experience?
I think there are probably three main categories here. The first being just the physical thrill of being out somewhere really wild and really beautiful and doing it under your own power and nobody in the world knowing where you are, and you put up your tent next to a riverbank somewhere and have a swim in the river and cook your little food and watch the sun go down. There's that sort of joy of it. Then there's the human element of the journey. It's just the random interactions. A lady in Alaska drove past in her car. She just wound down her window and said she'd just been to buy pizzas for her whole family, but they could probably manage with one fewer pizzas, gave me a pizza and drove off. And I was just left there in the road with this, standing with this pizza, this extraordinary tiny act of kindness. I just burst into tears. And things like that are so common when you travel. And then I think the third aspect that for me is important is the personal challenge of being worried perhaps about mountains I had to cross, or perhaps a country that I perceived might be dangerous, and being persuading myself to be brave enough and persistent enough to go do it, and then accomplishing that, and then being surprised and proud and thinking, wow, if I did that, what else can I do? So I think the sort of personal development side of travel is a huge reward, and quite an addictive thing as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And after such an epic trip like your bike trip, what were you feeling? Obviously, it spurred you on to continue to do more adventures, But how long did it take for you to say, you know, I want to tackle the next challenge? Or was it, as you were doing the bike trip, you thought, I can't wait to get home to do this next one? Did you need recuperation time or what?
I think on some of my trips, so up on the ice cap in Greenland or rowing the Atlantic Ocean or something like that, I've spent quite a lot of time on those journeys daydreaming about the next one and what's next. And normally if I'm in a cold place, I'm dreaming about a hot place next time and that sort of thing. But I think the bike trip was so all-consuming. It was my life for a significant chunk of my 20s, which are a massive, important part of your life. So that was really my life. And when I came home from it, I was just absolutely exhausted and empty. And I think I was empty really for about year and a half, 2 years before I felt the urge to head out again.
And what did you do then in that year and a half? If you weren't, you know, at that point doing an adventure, what type of stuff did you do?
I started writing the first couple of books about my adventures, and I paid for my life by giving talks about my adventures, primarily at schools. And then gradually as I got better and my network spread a bit, starting to talk to businesses as well. So that paid for my life till the books were done.
Very neat. And it's crazy. If you actually go to alistairhumphreys.com, you even have a drop down menu that says adventures and then lists all the crazy things you've done. So I guess that's when you can call yourself a true adventurer. When you can put on your business card is when you can fill a drop down menu full of adventures. Could you give us a recap of your other adventures? You kind of touched on a few just in there, and just the one or two things that stuck out from them, because you have about, I think, 8 major adventures, something like that.
Once I decided to try and make my career out of this stuff, I made a deliberate decision to not become a specialist in one type of thing. And I think that mostly just suits my personality. I like doing new things and starting out by being rubbish at it and then trying to master new skills. And also wanting to go to different parts of the world and different environments and travel via different means and to mix wilderness experiences with human immersive experiences. Therefore, the things that I've done have been quite varied. So I've sailed across the Atlantic Ocean, and I've also rowed across the Atlantic Ocean. I've walked across the Empty Quarter Desert in Arabia, following in the footsteps of an old British adventure hero of mine called Wilfred Thesiger. I've walked across southern India, coast to coast, following the holiest river in southern India. I've been on Arctic expeditions up on the Arctic Ocean in Greenland. I've walked and pack rafted the whole way across Iceland. So quite a variety of things in different parts of the world. None of my trips at all are world first or world epics or anything like that, but they're all firsts for me and they're all difficult for me. And I think, I hope that cumulatively they add up to become an interesting story. Interesting enough, I guess, to be able to turn it into a job that pays the bills and taxes.
So you've had all these cool adventures, Alistair. So if someone is listening and thinking, wow, that's exactly what I want to do, what is the next step someone might want to take to kind of start leading this adventure lifestyle?
The very first step people need to do is to start doing adventures. I get lots of emails from people who want to try and make their career out of adventure or travel writing or speaking, that sort of thing. And my answer is always the same, which is to not worry about that for now. Just get out there and do something that is meaningful to you and exciting and rewarding and challenging to you. And only if you fulfill any of those sort of things are you going to have any sort of story with any voice of authenticity that anyone else is going to give a damn about to actually start to pay you any money for it. So the first thing has got to be the journey. Go do the journey because you want to do it. Make it as big and as difficult and as challenging as you can, and then worry about the rest of it.
With any of the adventures that you had mentioned that you had done, was there ever a point where you did give up on an adventure or anything like that? Or has it always been able to kind of persevere through it?
I don't really give up, but I come very close to giving up a lot of the time. So generally, these big trips I do quite a lot of the time are quite miserable. And I feel slightly, if they're not miserable, then that actually means I'm on holiday rather than on an expedition. And therefore, I need to make it a bit harder on myself somehow. So I definitely toe the line of wanting to give up a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I think that people see the end result and think that's amazing what he's doing, and they see the pictures. And of course, usually when we tell stories about our travels, it's the positive things and the really cool things that happen. But there is many, many times where it's difficult or hard or, like you said, miserable, downright miserable sometimes. How have you found ways to push through it other than just you know, I want to complete the journey? Or is it basically all mental? Are there some times where you've come up with strategies? Because there are going to be people listening to this who think, all right, I'm going to go out on this adventure. I think there's some ways that maybe you could help them continue it and finish it. Because most adventures, I would say, do end up being completed, at least the ones that I hear about.
When I was cycling around the world, I was doing it on a ridiculously small budget. I spent about $10,000 in 4 years. So money was quite a grind on that trip. I was always just sleeping wild, eating the cheapest foods. And what I wish I'd done was to put aside some small budget, just not very much, I don't know, $20 a month, $50 a month, something like that, which was like an emergency amount of money that I could spend without having to feel eternally guilty about having to spend it. So when it was absolutely pouring with rain, then I could treat myself to the cheapest motel in town without beating myself up and hating myself. Or if it was really hot, I could treat myself to a cold Coke rather than just drinking tap water the whole time. So there's small little things like that, I think, to just not be so hard on yourself all the time. And then also in terms of actually making the decision to quit something, I had this rule that I was never allowed to quit at night time or when I was cold or sick or tired or wet. So I could only quit after a good night's sleep on a nice sunny morning, after a really big breakfast. And if I still hated life enough, then why not go home and do something else? It's not supposed to be a torture process.
I think those are two of the best pieces of advice I've heard on this podcast. We're like 46 episodes in, both of those. The setting money aside, because I'm the same way. When I'm traveling, I want to do it on a budget. I want to save as much as I can so I can continue to travel. But there are times where you literally just have to say, this is worth it, right? And for you, it was like a can of Coke because you had such a small budget. But all of us can do that in our travel life. Set some money aside and just say, this is my, you know, fun fund or anything like that, or get out of the dumps fund. And that's really cool. And not making a big decision at night when you're down in the dumps, like you said, that's perfect advice, I think, Alistair.
Good.
You talked about the budget a little bit, and many times you've traveled on a limited or almost non-existent budget. I mean, $10,000 in 4 years. What are some tips you can give people to save money on the road so they can continue to travel more and spend less?
There's two options for life. You can either earn lots of money or you can spend no money, and both of those are entirely viable options for traveling. I read a book a while ago, actually when I was cycling around the world, I read it by a guy called Jim Rogers, who is a billionaire, and he was driving around the world in slightly different style to me. But what struck me was the very big overlap in our attitudes. So we're both doing these trips for similar reasons. He just had loads of money and I just didn't spend any money, and both of those work. My advice really is, if you really want to go far on a decent budget and also to have the best adventure you'll ever have and to challenge yourself and learn to meet the best people, is to ditch the trains and buses and hire cars and get yourself a bicycle. Get on a bike, and you don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to go fast. Just traveling by bike means you don't have to pay for any transport. That saved you huge amounts of money. It also means that you get, at night times, you're between cities, you're not in the cities, and therefore you sleep wild in a tent, which is brilliant to do and is also free. And you'll have your little cooker with you, so you would be cooking your own food rather than going to restaurants and pubs, and that saves you a load of money. And instantly your journey is 10 times cheaper than a backpacking trip and 10 times more rewarding and exciting.
Yeah. And I think that idea of there can be, you know, the continuum of spending nothing or making a lot of money, and finding that middle ground is always hard. And it's taken me a lot of years to kind of find my travel style or travel habits. And that's constantly changing as well as I get older, or, you know, with if my wife's on a trip, it's a lot different than doing it solo. So I think, don't be disheartened or dismayed if you think, oh, I spent more than I wanted to on that trip, or my experience was rougher than I wanted it to be, or whatever. You're going to figure it out, and it's going to change by the time you figure it out. And that is what makes travel travel, right?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be fun as well. It's something I have to remind myself a lot, because I do tend to be quite hard on myself. But I think that there's getting a balance there between, so for example, for my sort of level of travel is whether choosing, shall I have a beer tonight? And that's a good thing to do because it's fun and you get to talk to some people, versus shall I not have a beer tonight? Because that beer that costs a few dollars is equivalent to an entire day and night of cycling somewhere, which would be a beautiful thing to prolong my journey.
Yeah, and finding that balance, like we said, sometimes you just have to spend the money, but there are other times you have to look ahead, and you'll figure it out as you travel. I'm still figuring it out. I think you're probably still figuring out. So again, don't think that you have to have it all figured out before you travel. The important thing is getting out there and doing it. And we've talked about your crazy big adventures, but one of the neat things about you and your mission is that you're very, very cognizant of the fact that most people cannot embark on these huge adventures for various reasons, health, work, family, money. They don't want to do a 4-year bike trip, believe it or not. So you've started a movement called Micro Adventures that is incredible and really gaining steam so much that you just wrote a book about it. And that's your newest book that just came out. What are micro adventures?
I think a micro adventure is just an adventure. It's no different from that, isn't it? And an adventure is something that you do because it's fun and gets you out into nature, out into the wild, out to somewhere you've never been before. Perhaps it's something that challenges you a little bit, gets you a bit out of your comfort zone. All of those things are adventure, and a micro-adventure is just the same. It just happens to be something that doesn't take a lot of time or a lot of money. You don't have to live somewhere wild. You don't have to live in Montana to be able to do this. You can do it wherever you happen to live. You don't have to have fancy, expensive equipment or be a real expert or be super fit. So it came about really because of all these reasons that stop people having adventures. Some of them are valid. Some of them are excuses that we build up in our heads because it's easier to just carry on as it life is than to shake it up and do something different and a bit scary. And I think there's a bit of excuse and a bit of genuine barrier in all of these. But all of these things like time, money, I wanted to try and find ways that you could still have adventure, but with those restrictions in your life. So trying to do things that are small, close to home, don't take a lot of time. And that's what I've spent the last couple of years doing and encouraging other people to do.
And you did take 1 year for your kind of year of micro adventure, correct?
I really believed that these small things were adventures and were rewarding and fulfilling in the same way that other adventures have been. So I decided to commit to spending a whole year just to explore my country. And I live in Britain, which is quite small, pretty crowded, not the wildest, most rugged, most adventurous of countries. So I thought if I could find adventure here, and particularly I live down in southeast England, London, it's the least wild part of a not very wild country. So if you can find adventure around here, you can find it anywhere. And so I set out my beginning of this mission to prove my point was there's a road that goes the whole way around London, a huge circular freeway called the M25. Everyone hates the M25. It's, it just epitomizes tedious commuting, traffic, horrible commuter suburbs, that sort of rubbish thing. So I set out to walk a lap of that. It's a 120-mile journey, and I absolutely loved it. It honestly felt like cycling around the world had done. It was challenging. I went places I'd never been before. I met interesting people. I learned stuff. All of these ingredients for adventure were here, and people enjoyed that, my stories of that. So I started doing other things, swimming down rivers, getting tracked in inner tubes. If you can't afford a canoe, then go get one of the tubes that go in the tractor tires, get a few of them, drift down a river with your friends for the weekend, camp on the beach, adventures that you can fit into a weekend. And even smaller than that, the micro-adventure that sums up the whole concept the best is the idea of the 5-to-9 adventure. People with real jobs, real lives are so defined by their 9-to-5. Their 9-to-5 is who they are. That's the reality of life, but it's also a slight constraint on people's adventures. But if you flip that around and think about the 5-to-9, when you leave work at 5 p.m.-ish until 9 o'clock the next morning, you're free, theoretically. So 16 hours of freedom every day. So why not see that as a great opportunity for adventure rather than the constraint on your life? So when you leave work at 5 o'clock, instead of going home, jump on a train or on the bus or on the car, head out of the city, and go climb a hill. Climb a hill, sleep on the summit, sleep under the stars, and in the morning run back down the hill, have a quick swim in a river, if possible, jump back on the train, back into the city, back to your desk at 9 o'clock. And when your boss says to you, "Did you do anything interesting yesterday evening?" you can say, "Yes, I had an adventure." So I think things like that, they're the micro-adventures that I've been trying to encourage.
That's such a neat idea of you have those times, and you know, we go home, we watch TV. I got sucked into Britain's Got Talent when I was just in London a week ago, you know, and that's fine. But you you had that time to do that. And if you did take one day and did it, you'd feel so alive. And I think that's kind of the general theme. I thought even more micro adventure when you said 5 to 9, it could be even before work. You know, you go out and you bike around for an hour before work, or you bike to work if you normally take the train, or just any little thing of getting out and doing something different. And when I lived in Japan, you know, I had two options. I could take public transport or I could bike. And, you know, the days that I biked, I felt so much more motivated, so much more energy, stuff like that, because I had done something, you know, prior to getting to work. And it was just, like you said, it was a little micro adventure within the day, a really, really micro adventure, but it was something different.
And I also think these things are quite symbolic, really, of doing bigger adventures, really. Because the difficult thing is overcoming the inertia, making yourself commit to something, make yourself begin something. And once you do something, even a tiny little thing like these micro adventures, hopefully you'll enjoy it, you'll thrive on it. And then you might think, right, well, next weekend I'll do something a bit bigger and a bit bigger and a bit bigger. And these are the tiny steps that lead to you going the whole way around the world.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorite micro adventures? You've talked about a few that you've done. Have you heard of other people? Because there's more people in this movement, I guess we would call it, that are kind of taking this idea of micro adventures that you started and running with it. Can you give us some that people have done that you thought, you know what, that's just really cool?
What's been really rewarding about the whole thing is through social media, and specifically through the hashtag microadventure, is being able to see what other people have done and share with other people. And therefore, normal people, and this is slightly in inverted commas, so normal people, as in not professional adventurers, are going off to do this sort of thing. And when other normal people see what normal people have been doing, they think, well, hey, there's really no excuse for me not to do this. So that's been really nice, seeing what other people have been doing. There's a great one actually in Japan a couple of years ago, and someone wrote up the rules of microadventure in Japanese, which is good to see. There's been like families doing it, the kids with their dad sleeping out under the stars. That's been a really nice thing to do. They're quite simple in their nature, in that it's just a few days maximum. So realistically, it's people cycling or canoeing or walking or running somewhere, camping wild. And it's a very simple idea. And it's not a new idea. People have done this stuff for a long time. It's just trying to persuade people that this is an adventurous thing to do and therefore worthwhile.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think about too is I just took two friends of mine from Canada who are here visiting me in Philadelphia, and we went to go see the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall. If people listening don't know what that is, it's the historical center of Philadelphia. And those are things that are right around me, you know, maybe 30 minutes away at most. And I don't go and do them in my day-to-day life because I can do it at any time. And that's what we normally think about our hometowns. I can do it at any time. It's always there. And it's so neat to have people visit you. So that's another kind of, I guess, tip or something that I tell people. Having friends come is so awesome because you get to be a tourist in your own town and a tour guide. So you show them all the stuff that you found, and then you get to go to do the stuff that's kind of quote-unquote popular in your area. And it's its own micro-adventure.
When I got home from cycling around the world, one of the first things I did was buy the Lonely Planet guidebook to Britain and the Lonely Planet guidebook to London, because I loved traveling around the world. I'd loved being curious and open-minded and interested about places I went. And so I wanted to carry on that attitude to home rather than just thinking, oh, this is my city, I know it, it's a bit rubbish, to try and look at it with curious, enthusiastic eyes, exactly like I do when I fly to some other city in the world.
Yeah, the first thing me and Heather did when we came home from Japan, it was 2 years in Japan, and we had traveled a bunch around Japan. We did India, Indonesia, like everywhere in Asia that we could think of. And we got home, we're like, all right, we're going to stay in the States for 8 or 9 months. And we went out to San Francisco for the first time. I went down to New Orleans. We went out to Denver, just all these places that not really close to where we live, but it was our country. And we really said, we're going to make an effort to start exploring it, because at this point, we had been to more countries than states. And that's a funny thing to do. And like you said, I've just had friends in town. And I thought, why don't we do a Philadelphia walking tour? You know, a walking tour of your own city. And it's just cool the things that you can learn by doing that, by buying a guidebook or even just looking online, top 10 things to do in X, Y, and Z. And it really makes you appreciate where you live a lot more, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think also if you combine photography with this as well, that's something I've really loved doing, is learning to photograph around the places that I live, because that really forces you to be more observant as well.
Yeah, so for micro-adventures, if we boil it down here, what's the biggest thing that people need to understand about this concept?
anyone who thinks they'd like to have some sort of adventure in their life is capable of doing so. You just need to make a plan, commit to it, and then go and do it. You don't need a lot of fancy equipment to do this. Really, it's just a sleeping bag, a bivy bag, which is like a waterproof cover for a sleeping bag, a small backpack, a bit of food, and that's all you need. So you don't need a lot of kit. Wherever you happen to live in the world, you are no more than 2 hours from countryside. Certainly from London, which is a pretty big city, anywhere in London, you can be in the countryside within an hour, hour and a half. And it's almost midsummer now, so the evenings are light. Now is the time to do it. So you need to stop mucking about and go do it right now.
Yeah, there it is. Go do it right now. And you don't have to plan so much. Just get out, do it. And I think that will then, you know, show you probably if you enjoy doing it, which most people who get out and do it do. And it also set you up, as Alistair said, for then those bigger adventures. Because you have some experience, you have some knowledge of how things work. And there's no reason. You've taken all the excuses out, Alistair, with this micro adventures that people say time, money, you know, equipment. We've heard the laundry list of them. You're saying, hey, just go do it. Even if it is a 9-to-5, anyone can basically manage that. So one of the favorite questions I like to ask guests on the show is about their travel mistakes or mishaps, because everyone seems to think that seasoned travelers have it all together, but the reality is much different than that. I'm sure you've had a couple of these. Is there a hilarious mishap or two that you had while traveling that really kind of sticks out in your mind?
Gosh, I've had plenty of mishaps. I'm a total idiot. But I think they often turn out to be sort of quite rewarding parts of the journey. The desert trip I did, I walked across this desert in Arabia, and I did it by pulling this big cart, which you mentioned right at the start, and it was just incredibly terrible cart. It was absolutely useless. It didn't even steer. It was absolutely awful. And I thought instantly our trip had failed, but we just had to go find some local guys with a welding torch who could add a steering device to it, make it work, and then it turned out to be fine. It actually turned out to be a good part of the trip, but that was a pretty disastrous beginning to try and attempt to walk across the desert with a car that didn't steer.
So let's talk about that trip real quick, because we didn't touch on it that much when we talked about some of your other adventures. What made you decide, I'm going to pull a 600-pound or 800-pound cart through a desert? Why did you add that extra impediment into a journey that would already be tough? I'm going to walk across a desert. You added that extra obstacle.
Well, the cart was necessary because there's no supplies out there. So it just meant that we could be self-sufficient. Wilfred Thesiger, the guy who did it originally, did it by camel. I couldn't afford a camel. And also, I don't know how to drive a camel, and I wanted this physical challenge of the journey. So you either pull a cart, you have a camel, or you do it in a 4x4 vehicle, which didn't interest me.
So there you go. You just picked the hardest route, and you finished it. Give us a little bit of the details of how long it took and stuff like that.
It's about 900 miles-ish. It's quite hard to know exactly, but we went from southern Oman up through Oman and finished in the craziness of Dubai, the shiny glassy skyscrapers, which is just an amazing place to emerge into after walking for about 40 odd days through the desert. To arrive in Dubai was ridiculous, and we finished at the top of the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world, which seemed a really fitting and totally mad place to end this journey.
Now, you didn't take the cart into the Burj Khalifa, did you?
We intended to, but as we approached Dubai, we realized that our cart was just a suicide device, really. We would just get crushed by something. So we donated our cart to a museum who looked rather surprised at us arriving and giving them our cart. And then we did the last couple of days just with big backpacks.
Very cool. And if anyone is interested in more detail about any of Alistair's adventures, there are the books about biking around the world that you can pick up. They're really great. I've read them personally. And on the website, each adventure is kind of split up. Your micro adventures as well as your, you know, what we'll call bigger adventures. So you can really dig into them and get more details about each one of those if you are interested in that. So, Alistair, then I've got to ask you, you've been to a bunch of places. And what are some of the places that you would recommend to travelers, whether it be adventure travelers or travelers in general, that you've just had amazing experiences in and that you thought, you know, this is a place I want to go back to, or I just really loved for a specific reason?
There's so many places, and I really think that you could go anywhere in the world and it would be interesting and worthwhile doing. But a succinct answer, I suppose, would be
two opposites of things I love. One is the humans in the world. So for that, the best place to go is India, to be surrounded by a billion people. And the total crazy, noisy madness of India is something I think everyone should experience in their life. And then the flip side of that will be the empty wilderness of Iceland, which is so beautiful, so pristine, such a civilized, easy place to travel, and an absolutely beautiful place. I really loved Iceland.
Very, very neat. And I've been to India, haven't been to Iceland, so I'll have to try to get there myself. Last question here. What do you have in the pipeline that people should be looking out for, either personally or professionally? Do you have an adventure on the horizon, and what are you kind of working on?
Well, the main thing I'm working on right now is my new book, which is called Micro Adventures. It's just come out. And so writing a book's a lot of work, a lot of effort, but it's also slightly, if it's your career, it's slightly just the tip of the iceberg writing it, because once you've written it, you then have to get people to buy it. So I'm going to be spending, I imagine, most of this summer just trying to get the book out there to a wider audience. And then afterwards, I really don't know what's next. I really would like to do more microadventures. I'd love to do some microadventures in the US. I think that's a perfect market and a perfect landscape to go do it. But I also really enjoyed filmmaking, so I don't know what's going to come next.
Hey, that's the beauty of it all. And if you guys are interested in microadventures, we'll have that linked in the show notes. And I got to give you some credit here. You just told me before the show that microadventures hit number 12 on the bestseller list in Great Britain, right?
Yeah, number 12 on Amazon. I was one behind Stephen King, which I think is no bad place for any author to be. I've now dropped way down below him, but for that brief moment, it was nice.
Yeah, so a lot of people getting the book, a lot of people loving it and supporting Alistair. I know he appreciates that. So if anyone does choose to pick up the book, you know, we both appreciate it. I can personally attest to the quality of the books for you biking around the world. They were absolutely brilliant to read. I really loved them. So keep up the good work with Micro Adventures. And thanks so much for coming on the show. I love the idea of Micro Adventures. It's right up the alley of what I try to preach here at Extra Pack of Peanuts, and that people should just get out and travel no matter where it is, no matter how far they're going to go. And that's exactly what you're selling there with Micro Adventures, is just getting out and going. So before I let you go, remind people how they can come connect with you. And of course, the best way for people to grab any of your books, whether it's the new Micro Adventures or any of the old ones as well.
I think if people Google Micro Adventure, if they look for the hashtag Micro Adventure, they'll see lots of interesting stuff. The website, alistairhumphreys.com, and then there's Twitter and Facebook and Instagram from that. And the book is available in Amazon and in all good bookstores, as they say.
That's great. Alistair, thanks again for coming on. I look forward to reading about even more of your crazy adventures on your site throughout the coming months. And if you're coming to the US and want to do micro adventures, I'd love to team up and do a few with you. That'd be real fun.
Brilliant. That sounds good. Thank you very much, Trev.
Thank you. Guys, I've just given you a tiny glimpse of some of the incredible adventures that Alistair has done. So if you want to read more on them or just look at some of his cool photography, head on over to alistairhumphreys.com, which we've linked in the show notes. Also, don't forget to check out his new book, Micro Adventures, which we've also linked to in the show notes. You can get it in both paperback and as an electronic version. And of course, get out there and start taking some micro adventures. I'm personally going to head out for one night this weekend with my bike in a tent and take one of my own. And if you're social media friendly, don't forget to tag it with the hashtag microadventure so others can see what you're doing and be inspired by it. Lastly, if you're listening to a travel podcast, that probably means that you want to travel more, and I want to help you do that. And the easiest way for me to help you travel more while spending less is for you to go over and sign up for the Extra Pack of Peanuts email newsletter. And you can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. By signing up for the newsletter, you'll be getting email updates anytime we put up a new podcast, as well as anytime we put up a new post to the site. You're also going to get our free copy of Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire, which is going to set you on the path of how to start acquiring frequent flyer miles and really start traveling around the world for next to nothing. So extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You can sign up for our email newsletter. You can stay abreast of everything that's happening on Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I can help you start to travel more while spending less. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. I'll see you next week, and until then, happy free travels.